All right. I'm really excited about this guest. We now welcome on John Wells, better known as John the Beer Snob, an Arkansas-based craft beer aficionado, enthusiast, provocateur. I don't know if you could include that in there. I read your Facebook
I think I provocateured a few times. Yeah.
So a little backstory here. Well, first of all, I appreciate you coming on. I've been really excited about this for a while, and it's been great to reconnect. So thank you for taking a minute.
Well, it's great to get the invitation, man. I love this kind of stuff.
Absolutely. So like a little backstory, because you are a slightly different guest than a lot of the stuff we do on the pod, is it mostly being sports centric, but as I kind of outlined to you when I reached out, was I really just kind of talk to people and things I find interesting and about things I find interesting. And This had definitely stuck in my mind for a while. So I was fresh out of undergrad, interning at the Arkansas Democrat Gazette when summer of 2017. And my boss gives me a phone number of some guy who he claims knows everything about the beer scene in the Little Rock area, because I'm supposed to be covering this great Arkansas Beer Festival, I think is what it was called. And I think we only talked on the phone for like 20 minutes. And I remember leaving that conversation like, damn, I wish we could have like met up for a few. Like this was like, I had so many more questions, but it was just like your basic story you'd hand to an intern. But it left me wondering. And so I subscribed to your newsletter for a while. And that's kind of what kept me, I guess, you know, in touch, in the loop with things. Mm-hmm. And so I guess that's as good a place to start as any. You have been around Little Rock for pretty much your whole life, it sounds
pretty
like.
Pretty much, yeah. I've lived a couple other places, but it's really almost all of it right here in Little Rock.
And the kind of Google search, Intel research background, whatever you want to call it, I read a story on you that I think was actually written by my boss at the time, Shea Stewart, great guy, in 2012, about how you got into the beer scene, and it all started with the ski trip in Austria. Is this correct?
That is correct.
So kind of give us the background there, kind of up until what your newsletter and kind of advocacy for craft beer in Little Rock and really just kind of the South in general has become since.
Mm-hmm. Well, the story about I went on a ski trip. I got called at the last minute. I was a member of the Little Rock Ski Club at that time, and I got a call from one of the members that said somebody's going to have to cancel at the last minute, and that this was a very popular trip, and that I might want to buy his ticket from him. And I got to thinking about it for a second. I really couldn't afford it, but I wanted to do it, so I did it. And the trip was to Vienna, Austria.
Wow.
And yeah,
that's a long way.
And to get to go there for a very, very reasonable price. Well, I had a girlfriend at the time, and so I planned to take her with me. Well, she farted around until the plane tickets weren't available anymore. So we flew together from here to our connection in Amsterdam. But after Amsterdam, we didn't know what we were going to do. Well, I asked to see if maybe they couldn't seat her on our plane, but what they told me instead was, no, we're actually trying to get people off this plane. It's overbooked. Would you be willing to take her flight? Well, shit, her flight went straight to Innsbruck. I mean, the other group's going to have to go on a bus, and I'm going straight in. I said, hell yes. And that really was one of the more interesting landings I've ever been on. And I'm also a private pilot. And boy, I'm telling you, they have to thread the needle to get a plane in that place. But anyway. So we were just killing time, waiting for everybody else to get there and sitting at the bar. And I started to drink this beer. And up to that moment in my life, I had never thought that beer was supposed to taste good. I thought beer was supposed to be marginally able to cover up the taste of alcohol so that if I wanted inexpensively to get a buzz going, that's what I would drink. I would drink the beer. And I literally would sit there and compare beers side by side that were just the commercial ones off the shelf. And I really would most likely pick the one with the least flavor. And yet, all of a sudden, I'm drinking a beer that really, really tastes good. And I, for the first time in my life, I got kind of pissed off that I wasn't going to be able to keep drinking. I mean, after three or four of these things, I'm getting pretty looped. And I thought, well, I can't keep doing this. But it tasted so good, I couldn't believe it. And I remember the name of the beer. It was Adam Brow, which at that time I thought was a local brew, but it turns out it actually came from Holland. And so anyway, that was the story. And from that point on, I became very interested in beer and started exploring around and learning, trying to teach myself stuff. And then eventually the newsletter just kind of evolved out of that. I had a friend of mine who was doing a newsletter, and I'd always taken his. And so he gave me a few pointers on maybe how to get it started, but really just kind of jumped in feet first.
So that's a really interesting kind of way to get into it. And just to kind of set a timeline for people listening out there, I read in the article it was early 90s. Do you kind of remember exactly what date this was?
It would have been mid-90s. It would have probably been 95-ish, somewhere around in there, 96 maybe.
Okay. And so roughly then, so you're that 95, 96, somewhere in the middle, you're roughly how old at that point?
Be 30 in, it'll be 40. I'll be 40 at that age.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So you're almost right around 40 at that age. You'd been drinking beer a long time, I'm guessing.
I had, in fact. Yeah.
But
I did not enjoy it. I just drank it because of the buzz or the price. I mean.
Yeah. Some combination of the two, I think, is why a lot of people drink beer. And so I find that very fascinating. So you're sitting there. You're almost 40. Like, you know, I feel like people get set in their ways, particularly with the things they drink and the way they drink them, mm-hmm. and kind of get set in their habits. I imagine having this kind of like renaissance and new experience to where you're like, holy shit, like what is this? This can't be beer. I imagine having it happen at that age had to be, I don't know if inspiring is the right word, but I could see how at that point where you're like, why do we not have this back home was kind of mm-hmm. your thought process. Was that kind of what you were thinking at the time?
That was exactly what it was. I mean, I remember there was a period of time there where I thought I was making progress and I really was just drinking the same old swill. But eventually I started I remember I looked at a thing and it called it a pale ale and it just sounded sissy to me. So I want to try something more substantial. You know, I don't want to mess around with some sissy ass little pale ale, you know. And then all of a sudden I tried one of them and bam, there it was. I mean, I had a Sierra Nevada pale ale and wow, it was from that point on, then I really was hooked. I mean, I even, the guy down here at the bottom of the hill, I moved in this house shortly after that. And the guy down the hill there at the liquor store, I went in and he didn't have any craft beer. And I said, I could walk to this store. It was so close to my house. I said, could you please just order me some beer so I can buy it from you? He said, I'd have to buy a whole case of that stuff. His exact words. I'll have to buy a whole case of that stuff. I said, well, you know, I'm going to buy at least a six pack now. In a couple of days, I'll come back, buy another one. And if you don't sell the other two in the meantime, I'll come back and get them. So you're not going to be out any money. I guarantee you I'll drink that case before it's too much trouble. And so I went back down there, like I told him I would, about 2 days later and bought the second six pack. And I went back a couple of days after that and they were gone. But he'd sold them. And so I said, well, I assume you're going to start carrying that beer. He said, nah, I just don't go with it. So here I am sitting here with a, what should have been a top-notch liquor store right here at the bottom of the hill, right by my house. And I can't do business there. So I went around the corner there and stopped in and saw a guy named Doug that worked at Pleasant Valley Liquor at that time, two locations prior to where they are now. And he seemed to know quite a bit about it. And I'd already talked to him a little bit about some wine that, you know, that he was pretty good with. And that's another backstory of the thing is I actually was a wine snob before I was a beer snob.
Really?
One of my best friends is a wine expert and hell, he taught me more than I ever wanted to forget about wine. And then all of a sudden, you know, it's like, well, but wait a minute. I had no idea beer could be that good. And it's like, here's this guy giving me a perspective as a born and raised country boy from Arkansas that now knows a lot about fine wine. And I thought, well, what would it be like to kind of turn like you would and say, well, why don't we make beer snootier than it is? Like he's trying to bring wine down to the everyman's level so that they can understand it. Why don't I take people the other direction? Why don't I see if I can't get a little more flair to it? And that motivated me. I wanted to see people, you know, if you're going to drink something good.
Absolutely. And so at that point, like you mentioned, you're kind of around 40. And just to give a little bit of background as we kind of bounce around here, you've lived in Little Rock at this point most all your life. You said you were self-described, and I could have dubbed you this before you had to say it yourself. Renaissance man. You mentioned you've done a lot of different things. You ended up as a social worker, just recently mm-hmm. retired after working for the VA's office in Little Rock, correct? And mm-hmm. so
that's correct.
So you get back from the trip, and I imagine, was this encounter with the liquor store up the street, was this after you got back from the ski trip?
It was, and I'm sure maybe a little time had passed in between there, but we're still talking about that 95, 96 range.
Sure. And so you come back from that trip, and obviously it sounds like, at least from kind of everything that's happened from it since, that's something that stuck with you. When you come back, what's kind of, like, take me to you coming back from that trip up to, like, kind of becoming what you became in the craft beer scene. Because what I think is fascinating about this is younger people like me, I'm 26 years old, mm-hmm. you know, craft beer is almost kind of like there's a craft beer guy that, like, may not even be into that craft, like, that much into craft beer, but likes to say he does because it's been around.
There's not a craft beer god, but there is a patron saint. That's yes. St. Arnold.
Exactly. Saint. And so, yes. like, it's almost like...
I serve underneath him.
So it's almost like a bragging point amongst, you know, people my age now, but because it's so common, but kind of enlightening people up to the point where you are now, it was not common at all back then, right?
No. And in fact, keep in mind that my progress was so slow and steady, I didn't actually start the newsletter for another probably 9 years, 8 years. And so, I mean, there was a time that I really got into it and got into it and got into it some more. And then all of a sudden, why don't we just go ahead and make a newsletter out of this thing, you know?
Take me through the progression of that. So you get back, you obviously kind of into craft beer. You kind of outlined a little bit with that example how hard it was to get. Take me through, like, the next few years of kind of how you get further and further, you know, interwoven into the whole craft beer experience. What was that like over the next couple
of years? Well, just to paint the picture for you, it was around that time that people first started going downtown in Little Rock. Before then, downtown was a ghost town at night. There'd be plenty of activity during the day, but you go down there at 6-7 o'clock at night and there's nobody anywhere downtown. And little by little, the River Market kind of started drawing some attention and people started wanting to do some things. Well, then a place decided to put a brewery in down. And the name of the place was River Rock. It's where I believe Damn Good Pies is these days. But in that same deal there. Omar, that just I heard he retired from Lost 40, built that brewery. And so we were able to get him back into town. I say we, I didn't have to do it other than giving him good reference when they asked me that. But this guy's, I mean, is a genius. And I'd sit there and shoot the shit with him and he'd come around talk and, you know, very, very, very personable fellow. And then lo and behold, we heard that there was going to be a flying saucer here and they would have hundreds of beers under one roof. And wouldn't that be interesting? So for many weeks, I would go to Bosco's and have a few beers there and then walk down to the flying saucer and have a few beers there. And little by little, well, by the time you get to the flying saucer deal, now you can really explore and find different beers and how to drink them. And some beers, it took me time. There was one beer in particular I absolutely hated the first time I had it. And I badmouthed it big time in the newsletter. And I was on the phone with the distributor the next day. Did you really have to say that? Yeah, I kind of did. Well, I had to retract it because what I found out was is I didn't know how to drink that beer. The same guy taught me into going to a sour beer tasting. The beer in question was the Boulevard La Folie. And it was a fairly expensive bottle of beer and I poured it down the drain. I took one drink of it and poured it out. I hated it. It was the worst thing I thought I'd ever put in my mouth. In fact, I said, y'all need to mix some oil with that and make a salad dressing out of it or something. Because it sure ain't got no place in the beer world. Well, come to find out that a beer of that quality, first off, you got to let it air out a little bit. And it'll lose that vinegary smell that's kind of off-putting. And then you don't drink it cold. You drink it just cool, you know, about maybe a red wine temperature. Well, then when I tasted it and sipped it, it tasted really good. It's just, I didn't know how to drink it. So now all of a sudden I got to go back on the newsletter and say, you know, I was bad mouthed. I was just kidding, really. It turns out it's a good beer.
So that's actually, there were two things from our initial conversation when I was an intern that still stuck with me literally to the time I messaged you on Facebook the other day is one, you call these light beers, the commercial stuff, the fizzy stuff. Is that what I'm thinking? And two, a lot of beer is best served at room temperature. And right. that was something that just kind of blew my mind. Hell, there is a decent chance back then that as we were talking on some evening that I was probably drinking a Coors Light or something as we were talking. And of course,
oh, shame on you.
I probably had a moment where I was like, oh, maybe I'm doing this wrong.
And I would also like to point out that this fellow's got an Ole Miss poster right behind his head. So, I mean, you know, there's a few leaks in this otherwise perfect facade. I'm just telling.
Look, our listenership knows that there's a lot of leaks, in the armor here. We're surviving, not thriving over here. So you're not telling them anything they don't already know. So you kind of get it more into kind of the beer scene. You mentioned about, you know, 8-9 years before you start the newsletter.
Right.
What kind of prompted you to start the newsletter? It sounds like you kind of just maybe got more and more into it. And, you know, one thing led to another where Little Rock, kind of the downtown, starts getting revived. You mentioned mm-hmm. Flying Saucer. The year I lived downtown, that was my favorite place to go. I love
it. It still is a wonderful place to go.
Oh, it's amazing. And so
it breaks my heart to tell you that I have not been back there since the pandemic crisis.
I hope
I'm looking forward to my first visit back there.
As I say, I hope you can get back there soon, because you're not kidding. And I'm sure it's grown since it first opened. But when you talk about a beer list and the amount of beers they have there, it's actually kind of staggering. Like, it's almost like a museum of sorts. It's
they call it an emporium and they ain't lying. I mean, you know, what, 75 taps? You know,
yeah, it's crazy. And so you kind of get more and more into it. And I imagine would you call it a hobby? Like those first 6-7 years after you got back?
My tax man and I had this conversation many times. He said, now, you know, this could look like a hobby. You got to be careful about some of this kind of stuff. I said, well, you know, do you want me to just not report the income? He said, no, you got to report the income. I said, well, okay, then whatever it is, I'm making money on it. And Diamond Bear was my first sponsor. And I really enjoyed interacting with them, especially in those early years, but we still talk even to this day. And then Spring Hill Liquor was my next one. And they were wonderful. And Spring Hill was committed at that time to jumping head first into the craft beer world. And once they did it, I think Colonial was right there with them. And then they ended up being a sponsor with me. And, you know, it just kind of grew from there. I loved it when Colonial moved to their new place, which was a remodeled Ford dealership, because, man, then they exploded, man. I mean, they got all different kind of stuff in there. And, you know, buy it, take it home, drink it. You don't like it, pour it out, give it to somebody, you know, go get another one.
That's probably actually the best way to ask it. At what point did it become a little bit of a supplemental income? So what made you want to start the newsletter? And at what point you realized you had something here?
Well, I'm not so sure, but what it kind of came to me, whether I wanted it to be that way or not. I mean, I had people coming to me and talking about sponsorship. I never once went trying to sell somebody a sponsorship.
Right.
But, you know, I knew Eric, that was the manager out there at Spring Hill. And so he and I probably talked about it over a beer or something, and finally decided that maybe we work out some kind of a sponsorship arrangement. And then, like I say, over the years, the sponsors kind of came and went. I probably went through 10 or 15 different people that helped me with the sponsorships from time to time.
What made you want to start the newsletter? How did that get processed? You mentioned you
had I'm talking about my wine buddy.
Yeah.
My wine buddy did a newsletter, and I guess got the bug from him. His was a completely different design. It was just that I wanted to do a newsletter that I got from him, you know. But that really is what that was, the last little spark that lit. When I sent that first newsletter out, I only sent it to 18 people.
I can appreciate that. It's kind of funny. So I was a reporter in a past life. I now live in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, and mm-hmm. marketing is my full-time gig. I do this work for rebelgrove.com, and reporting is kind of a hobby now as well, I guess you could call it that, a little bit of a side job. I've only been in the marketing world a year, but it started as a Substack newsletter. You know, nowadays everyone has a newsletter. It's the popular thing to do. So you were way, way ahead of your time.
Right.
But it's funny.
Yeah, because really, you think about it, I'm not a journalist. I mean, I don't know how to do what you know how to do. And so I'm at times I felt like I was masquerading as a journalist. And then my nephew started studying journalism, and all of a sudden he starts telling me about all the ethics and integrity and all the stuff that goes into it. You know, pretty soon I realized I really was pretty much a rank amateur.
But I can appreciate that, particularly because, so now it's easy. They have these sites to set it up for you. You literally just write the thing. People sign up on their own. What was it like back then trying to build, you know, now they call it a subscriber base, but I mean, like for you, what was it like trying to just build an audience? What was that like?
I would have tastings sometimes, or I would participate in a festival or something. And I would just put a little something up there with a sign up letter. And that was problematic because usually people had already been drinking and I couldn't read their writing when I got home. So I probably lost about 5% of those people that gave me their email. And then at one point it just kind of took off. I mean, I didn't really have to do anything. People were interested in it, talking about it, telling each other about it. But I probably got a couple hundred email addresses just by trying to start the newsletter. I think the newsletter kind of just took off.
Right, for sure. And so at that point, if you say it's about 8-9 years, it's probably 04, 05 ish, somewhere in that time when you started. It was like, at what point throughout this, it's interesting, from the time you get back from the ski trip and you kind of start getting into the craft beer scene and it simultaneously seems to start to grow in Little Rock. I guess it, trying to figure out the best way to ask this. At what point did you figure out that you were kind of a guy in that scene? Like, you know, you mentioned it starts small as the guy at the convenience store, you begging him to carry craft beer. At what point did you realize that you kind of had some pull in this whole scene as people started coming to you?
It wasn't a flip the switch on kind of deal. It just occurred over time, but I did start to notice it, you know, a beer festival that was here, that was a fundraiser and whatnot. They asked me to do a news interview about that festival. It was not the Great Arkansas Beer Festival, but it was a festival. And so once I got on TV, I noticed then that my subscribership, you know, took a pretty good pop up. But the funny part was, is I kept doing that and it didn't keep adding subscribers. That only worked right there in the early days. I think once people knew where they wanted to get their news from, well, that they'd made up their mind at that point.
Right. And so it starts to grow and it starts to take off, I guess, kind of simultaneously. It was the beer scene. Cause when I moved to Little Rock, someone was like, you got to check out the craft beer scene here. For a town of its size, it has an awesome craft beer scene.
That's exactly right.
You know, for someone my age, that was a popular thing to say about a lot of towns. But in Arkansas, I mean, particularly Little Rock, it was absolutely true to the nth degree. I mean, if anything, it was undersold. What was the turning point, do you think, in the Arkansas craft beer scene where you mentioned you get the one brewery and then Flying Saucer shows up? Like, it was there a point for you where you're like, okay, there's actually, like, you could call it a scene as opposed to people just starting to carry craft beer? What was the turning point?
Well, there was, I don't know if I could tell you the year, but it really exploded to where it's like everybody who knew how to homebrew wanted to open a brewery, and several of them did, you know. And at one time, we might have had 10 or 11 breweries right here just in the Little Rock Metro. I'm not sure how many we have now, because two things have happened since then. Is one is Saline County has gone wet. So now they've started to pick up some breweries and some craft beer scene. And the other part of it is then some of the breweries here realized they really didn't know enough to be in business. And so they went out of business for whatever reason, you know. So I guess in a way it might have grown a little too quick there for a minute. But every time somebody opened, the place started doing business. Craft beer took off. I mean, you think about, you know, we lost Blue Canoe, but they had a good run there for a while. And then I don't think Damn Good is brewing anymore. So we lost them. But, you know, even through the pandemic and everything, Flyway and Stone's Throw, man, they have just done great. I mean, they changed their business model and survived big time. And so I just love that kind of stuff.
Stone's Throw was another one that was not too far from my apartment because I actually lived in downtown, and so it wasn't too far up from there. And that was another one I really enjoyed while I lived there. And so kind of transitioning, I guess, away from the scene a little bit, I think your philosophy on beer is one really interesting and two kind of funny, because I'm going to read an excerpt from your Facebook page.
Okay.
If you don't mind. So it says.
Oh, I love hearing my own work.
Yeah. Isn't that the best? Someone recites something you wrote a while ago back to you. So here we go. Join me in my mission to deprogram the brainwashed masses from thinking that inferior yellow fizzy carbonated alcoholic beverages are beer just because the commercials say they do. It is our duty that these folks are sufficiently awakened to see these beverages as fake beers. Zirconium is not diamond, no matter how much it looks like it. Yellow fizzy beverages like Budweiser's and many others are not beer, unless you, of course, define beer as a drink made from barley and or rice, corn pudding, popsicles, sorghum, ice cream, or any other material containing sugar that includes hops and alcohol. And he goes on to talk about how there is real beer out there. People just need to be educated about this. At what point did those words kind of become something that drove you? Because clearly there's passion in what you wrote there. How quick when you got back from Austria to the point where it was like, people need to stop drinking the light beers of the world, the commercial light beers, and really be enlightened to this stuff?
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't know if I could answer that. I mean, it just kind of all happened gradually over time. But I was highly motivated by one of my early favorite beers, a beer called Arrogant Bastard. And I love that beer, and I love the snarky tone to their advertising campaign. And I'd already kind of decided that I wanted to try and take beer to a new level up, you know, like my buddy had brought wine down. I wanted to take beer up. But it really did. It became a passion. And when I saw that Arrogant Bastard and how bold they were with it, that just kind of gave me permission to do the same. The label, if one of the things you might want to do for your podcast is go get their slogan for Arrogant Bastard beer. I mean, it is hilarious.
The name itself might could describe me aptly. So if the slogan's anything like the name of the beer, we might be in business.
I'm telling you. It's their whole marketing campaign about that beer is you're not up for this. Just put it back down. You're not at this level. Go back and drink your yellow fizzy stuff. This beer's not for you. Now, I mean, that is a very, I mean, you talk about marketing. Wow. I don't know that I'd have signed on for that one. But right. It worked. So, hey, what do I know? But, and then even on their trucks, big letters. It's not too expensive. You're too cheap.
It's kind of deep in some ways.
Man, I just loved it. And that gave me a real kick in the pants to really get out there and say it like it is. And let's just get snarky about it. And that got me in trouble a time or two. There were times I would say something snarky. And like I say, maybe a distributor that had been nice to me before and, you know, invited me to a few things might not invite me the next time. You know, there were consequences. Several people were got mad about something that I wrote. One in particular got really mad. But anyway.
So as the craft beer scene grows, the newsletter starts to grow. And, you know, you have people coming to you because there is a certain aspect of if a distributor, like, you know, gives a shit what you say. Well, that kind of means something about what you've, you know, done to the beer scene there. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that people value your opinion.
And yeah, and I had an audience, and they wanted access to my audience as well. And I was proud to give it to them. I mean, I did not charge anything to mention somebody in the newsletter. It wasn't like the sponsorship was separate from the news. And my own sponsors, I had two of them get really mad at me because I didn't cut them any slack. They thought I was going to cut them slack just because they were sponsors. And I probably did, truth be known, but, you know, they didn't like the way I said it. And so I had to be careful sometimes.
Fair score.
That's snark. Not everybody appreciates snark, you know.
I can relate to that. Fair score is a fair score, though. So one of the last paragraphs of your Facebook description is, I prefer real beer, a beverage that is good tasting concoction made from fine malted barley, quality hops, and has alcohol in it that can also make you act bizarre in public. Define real, just in your own words, now that 20 years into this thing, what's fake beer and what's real beer?
Man, that definition has evolved for me and evolved and evolved. I think when I very first got into this thing, there was the Rheinsgebot rule from Germany that I thought was probably everyone should follow it. And that is, you shouldn't put anything in a beer other than, barley, water, hops, yeast. That's it. I mean, you don't put a bunch of frou-frou in beers. And of course, Budweiser immediately comes over here and starts putting rice in it. And then I think that some other ones use corn syrup and God knows what else, just because it's a good fermentable sugar, but it doesn't help the taste. But to me, a real beer is one that somebody really thought about the quality of that beer when they made it. They weren't making it just for a profit. I don't mind anybody making a profit. But, when you design a beer, you're designing it so that somebody will enjoy it. There was a place up in Fayetteville one time, Tanglewood. They've since gone under, but their slogan was, we make all of our favorite beers, and if there's any left, you can buy it. That kind of attitude, That isn't exactly the way it was said, but, their idea was, we're making this beer for us. We'll share it with you, but we drink beer like we like it. To me, my thing grew and grew and grew when it came to what ingredients you could put in beer, and that was highly influenced by being introduced to Belgian beers. Belgium, everything's legal. You can put anything in there and call it beer if you want to, but they have taken it to a next level. Of course, they have a certain candy sugar that is that's made from beets that really makes a nice additive to the very high alcohol beers. And so again, now that's an adjunct. I mean, now all of a sudden I'm flipping gears. I used to say I wouldn't put any of that kind of stuff in a beer, and now all of a sudden I would, But I don't do it, or I wouldn't do it for profit. I would do it because it makes it taste better. When you use an ingredient like rice, you're doing it for profit. That makes a very, very fermentable sugar. And it's so easy and so much more profitable. Why wouldn't they use it? But now you buy a beer from some of the great Belgian beers in particular, they're so, in fact, the very best beer worldwide, and I think most people agree, is an obscure monastery there in Belgium called West Vlieteren. And it's like drinking fermented fig juice or something. It's just delicious. It is just awesome to drink. But anyway, I digress.
What can you?
A real beer. I really, my definition has changed over time. I'm not quite so tight on that one.
What can you not put in a beer? Do you have any complete no-nos? I know you mentioned rice. Like, what makes a beer?
I don't want anybody to put anything in a beer just because it makes money. Okay. I want people to think about beer as craft, as a craftsmanship. A chef, somebody that really wants to have a certain flavor is not going to cut corners, nor should a beer master. You want a beer and you work at it and you get it to taste the way you want it to taste, but you don't, like a home brewer would never brew a beer just because it was cheap or whatever like that. I guess maybe they would, but it's really not that much more expensive just to go buy it off the shelf. You can make it a little bit cheaper, but not much. But it's about quality. I want to know that people are in it for the craft. And this is one of the things that I used to tell the beer folks all the time. Craft beer is one of those things, it's like an aura. And you don't mess with the aura. You got to play along with the aura. You've got to be a part of this thing. And too many people get into business and think like business people, and then they're making a product that they can sell to a distributor who can sell to the public. My thinking is nothing like that. I'm the beer enthusiast coming in and saying, yeah, well, I don't want it to taste good. I want to know that you put your heart and soul into it. This is a beer that you really, really like. Again, when Lost 40 recruited Omar, with that came a head full of recipes. Omar is old school. They've got folks of all different kind of talent over there, but Omar was the old school guy. He knew ingredients. He knew how to cook. He knew how to do it, and that matters. That matters that people care that much to go to that much trouble. And so when they hired him, he brings his, I wanted to say Kolsch, but it was, anyway, he brought an amazing beer recipe with him. And it was a Bock beer. And that Love Honey Bock came from that. I mean, he worked with the folks over there and they put that recipe together, and that was no accident that that beer came out as good as it did.
One of the things I asked you when I interviewed you for whatever that story was in 2017, and I'm not giving you any hints, but I think you'll probably know the answer. You asked me why, you flipped it on me. You asked me why I thought the Coors Lights, Bud Lights of the world sold it ice cold. Why do they do that?
Well, if you're using cheap ingredients, then it's going to come out in the flavor. But one thing about it is if you get that beer cold enough, then you're not going to taste the off flavor. The off flavors won't present themselves at 35 degrees. They will present themselves at 45 degrees. But now a really good beer at 45 degrees, you get the good stuff. You get that beer cold and you can't smell it. You can't really taste it because your tongue's too cold and your nose just can't pick up anything because it's too cold to become fragrance. So if I'm making a beer with cheap ingredients, I need to also sell you on the concept that it's way refreshing to drink this stuff ice cold. And like, you know, what was the Twin Peaks place up there, you know, had the thing with the 20. Oh, here's our temperature of our freezer right now, our cooler right now. It's 32 degrees in our cooler right now. Who cares? If you're trying to hide the taste of your beer, that's the only reason you would get it that cold. And some beers, I thought for years that I didn't like Guinness. I could not understand why people would make such a big deal out of Guinness. I would think by looking at it, it would be this ominous, gnarly, you know, grab it hard and drink it kind of beer, you know, and then I would drink it and it would just be nothing. And I didn't realize that I was drinking it too cold. Then I go into a little old beer joint down here off right there at Canis and Ronnie Parham from years ago. And there was a guy from the old country there. And he served me a Guinness like Guinness was meant to be served. And I drank that beer and I loved it. Now I was meeting the guy there because it was a pool hall. I wasn't meeting them there because they had a beer selection. I was quite surprised when I got there to find out they had a beer selection. But again, any kind of really, really dark beer like that, it probably is not going to taste good cold.
So what temperature do you drink beer at today? If you're just having a beer, pull it out.
It depends on the beer. Again, if I'm drinking beer for thirst quenching, I want a nice light lager. Maybe a Yingling, something like that, or Diamond Bear's got that, they got a new name for it. It used to be the Southern Blonde, but they call it Blue now. It's just got the name Blue. Man, those beers, I do want them cold because I do want to drink those after I've mowed the lawn or after I've, you know, been out doing chores or something. I don't want to come in and drink a real heavy beer. I want something that'll, you know, quench my thirst and get me going again. So those beers I will drink cold. Then you come up and maybe you start getting into some of those that are more, the hops are more important, like pale ales and IPAs, pilsners, things like that. That's when you can start warming them up a little bit so that the aromas start to release. And I hate it that your audience can't see my hand movement because, man, I'm giving it all, you know, that and more.
Oh, right up now. There we go.
But, you know, it just depends on the beer. The West Vlieteren 12 that I mentioned earlier, I would barely chill that one. Barely. Maybe red wine temperature, maybe 55, 60 degrees, something like that. IPA, I'd prefer them usually 45-ish, 50-ish. And then again, like I say, it just depends on the beer itself. Those sours, you know, you don't drink those cold. They taste terrible cold. I'm very much a witness.
And where did – so, you know, you clearly have all this knowledge from – all over the world, not just Little Rock. This may be an impossible question to answer, but where did like the craft beer movement, we'll narrow down the United States because it sounds like it's been in Europe longer. When did the craft beer movement in the United States start and where?
No, it actually, the craft beer started in the United States.
Okay.
There was a fellow that had been overseas and came back and tried to open a craft brewery. It was the New Albion Brewing Company. And he poured his heart and soul into that and ran himself completely broke trying to make it work, and it didn't work. Then next up was the Maytag family that made all the washers and dryers and appliances and stuff. They decided to give it a whirl, and they opened Anchor Steam in San Francisco. And then next up was Sierra Nevada around that same time, And all that had happened to make their world a better place was Jerry Garcia get up on stage with the Grateful Dead drinking a Sierra Nevada Pale Ale.
Wow, that's kind of so wild.
That, I mean, it exploded from there. And the good news was, is that those who have come since have paid homage to some of the original pioneers. And so the guy from Sam Adams brewed a batch of the original New Albion beer and gave that guy the money from the proceeds. We get back to the craft beer magic, the aura. It has that thing. We're all in this together. It's kind of an illusion because these guys do fight a little bit behind the scenes. But boy, out in public, for the most part, I would tell anybody, you know, speak kindly of your brethren.
Where is there a craft beer birthplace or hub in the United States? And because, you know, everywhere you go now, and it wasn't this way when you first got into it. But like, I lived in Cincinnati, Ohio for a summer, and there's this place up by my house called Mad Tree, and it was one of the better breweries I've ever been to. I loved it. I've had two or three beers that I would kill to have shipped to me if I could make it happen. I guess I could now in Texas. You know, Mississippi, you can't ship it across state lines. But be that as it may, is there a craft beer birthplace and a craft beer hub today? I guess kind of a two-parter.
There are several places that I would think would be good labels for a hub. The best place to do a beer vacation is Asheville, North Carolina.
I was wondering if you were going to say that. So I have a buddy whose mom lives there. That's actually the cap. Like, that's one of the best, you think.
Mm-hmm. Michigan has got a lot of really good places. They speak very highly of Grand Rapids. I love Grand Rapids. It's no Asheville. Asheville has just got a certain charm to it that is just, it's just, you can't really describe it.
How is craft beer and like, how has beer in general influenced your travels, particularly as you've entered retirement? Is that something you plan a trip around? How does that work?
Kind of. My wife and I do like to travel now. That's our favorite thing to do in retirement. The really cool part is that she pulls me in a completely different direction. She's not the slightest bit interested in the craft beer scene. And so when we go, we do the things that she likes to do during the day. And then as the evening rolls around, then I'll slip off and go find me a little craft brewery or someplace that the locals are talking about. So it's really both. And in fact, we now are regulars with Asheville, and we'll be going there soon. We're going there here in a few weeks.
For someone out there listening to this and they're trying to figure out how to kind of get into the craft beer scene and figure out what they like, what would your advice be to them to try to discover what you like?
I think one of the best things you can do is go to a local brewery and drink a flight. Get a flight of beers. Get those little, they're bigger than samples, but smaller than a portion. And just start tasting them and have them talk to you about them. The downside to it is, though, is most people really don't know or don't have the infrastructure to keep beer at a perfect temperature, because again, you would literally have to have like three different cooling systems for your beers, and a lot of places just don't have that. There is a place, if you want to see state of the art, there's a place in Brooklyn, if I can remember the name of it, Torst, I think, and every tap is fine-tuned for the beer that's in it.
Wow.
Every tap. And you can see it. They've got the lines running and the gauges and all the stuff. And they can mix a little nitrogen in there if they need to, or a little more CO2 if they need to. Or, I mean, it's state of the art. And it's walking distance from the Brooklyn Brewing Company, which is another amazing place. That would make a great beer destination. And I remember when I first started doing the beer traveling thing, I was actually disappointed that the craft beer scene had gotten any bigger than it had gotten in those days. I went to New York City and was disappointed. I mean, disappointed. And then all of a sudden, a couple of years, I go back and I think at that extra head in. We have better craft beer here than I could there at that time.
How much credit do you take for the Arkansas craft beer scene in general in Little Rock?
I am a legend in my own mind.
I love that. I'm going to have to steal that from you.
You know, I'm a beer snob. You know, no, I do think I played a part in it. I think
and hold on, not to cut you off, but to preface this, so it's sometimes it's better other people say it than you do. You were not only just a craft beer enthusiast, you pushed places to carry things. Because I've heard that in multiple different places. You push in pressured places to try different things and expand their horizons and carry that. So you absolutely deserve credit for that, whether you were going to give yourself credit or not. But I just wanted to preface it with that. Go ahead.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate it. I appreciate your kind words there. But I really did try and cheerlead for craft beer. You know, when people would say, well, my customers don't like that beer, my standard line was, well, don't you want some new customers? I mean, the Thurston Howell down here, back when they were open, I walk in, she had no craft beer whatsoever. I talked her into buying one craft beer. She said she would carry one just so I'd come there and drink it with her. And before they closed, they were a craft beer place. I mean, you could get all kinds of different craft beer. And she became very knowledgeable in craft beer over time. She didn't know squat about it there at first. But I wish that place could come back. I wish there was some way, because I love that little place. But anyway.
At what point did the audience catch up with the amount of beers out there? Like, which one was ahead of the other?
I think there is no real balance there. I think that we got a little too big, a little too quick, and maybe we thought we could do a little more than we could do, and so at one point the beer got ahead of the audience, and then again the audience gets ahead of the beer, and you know, if you want a certain kind of beer, you want to go someplace that's got it, you know. And I think also one of the things I'd like to put in a pitch for is when you buy a good craft beer, or if you're buying even just a regular beer, buy it from a liquor store. Buy it from a liquor store. It is easier to buy it in a grocery store. It's easier to buy it at Walmart. But those are the beers that the liquor stores stay in business with. Anything that sells in high volume, that gives them the financial resources to now keep the specialty stuff over here on the side that does not sell as well. It's not as profitable to carry craft beer. And not only that, really a lot of it, you got to keep it refrigerated. So that's an added expense. You know, why would I want to, you know, take on a bunch of craft beer when maybe I ought to be a whiskey kind of liquor store? Man, all you got to do is set that shit on the shelf and it's fine. You know, you don't have to do nothing to it. So, but it goes back and forth. The market gets ahead of the demand, and then sometimes the demand gets ahead of the market. It's gone back and forth two or three times.
Kind of in closing, did you have when you first got into it, and then you get the newsletter, and I know since you've gone in retirement, we'll get into where that people can find you in a second, but like, I'm trying to figure out how to ask this, was there a peak, and did you ever have a end goal for all of this, or were you just kind of along for the ride to see how big you could grow?
No idea where I was going. I didn't have the first clue. I mean, I'm not a businessman. I don't know how to run a business. I told all of my sponsors and people that supported the newsletter that I had absolutely no idea what I was doing. The first time one of them asked me for an invoice, I didn't even, how am I going to figure out how to write an invoice? I don't know how to write invoices. There's nothing to it, but it was then because I didn't know how to do it, you know. But it just took off, man. I mean, I just kind of rode with it, and I'm still rolling with it. I mean, I've dialed back a little bit since I'm not writing the weekly newsletter anymore. But I mean, I was just the other day, a lady called me, and we said earlier about the Southern Blonde. She said, I'm here. I'm at the liquor store. I hope you don't mind me calling, but I can't find my Southern Blonde. I said, well, just go pick you up a 6-pack of that blue. It's the same thing. Oh, okay. Thank you. I mean, I love doing stuff like that. That's just fun.
So it did. Do you go into places now? Like, was there a moment where you went into somewhere and some people knew who you were walking in?
Oh, yeah. That happens all the time. Now, that's the good part about traveling, though, because once I travel, that's not the case. I mean,
so you prefer it that way?
Nobody knows me in Asheville.
So you prefer it that way?
I don't. I prefer a balance between the two.
Okay.
I mean, if it really got to where I couldn't sit down and have a beer because people were bugging me all the time, that would be a problem. But that's not a problem. They just don't do it. I mean, it just so somebody – you know, greets me and says, I used to take your newsletter, whatever. You know, it's usually a very, very pleasant exchange.
How many beers have you had in your life? That types, not finished. How many different types of beer have you had in your life?
I have no idea. And I'm sure
thought about
there's still some styles out there that I haven't tried. I mean, they're just, beer is so much more complex than fermented fruit. I mean, you know, cider, you've got yeast and cider, I mean, apple juice, and that's it. I mean, what are you going to do to it? But in beer, all the hops taste different. All the malts taste different. And then you start combining how much you're toasting the malts or not toasting the malts. I mean, there's just so many different things you can do to beer to change the way it tastes.
Do you prefer a specific type of beer? What's your, like, do you have a favorite beer? Do you have a favorite type of beer? And then if you do, like, how do you keep an open mind when trying something else?
Oh, I definitely try and keep an open mind, because even if it's not my favorite thing, you know, like really sweet beers, for example, that's just not my thing, other than maybe some of those really big Belgian ones. Sometimes they're good, sweet. But I try to keep an open mind when I'm drinking beer. Really, right now, if I had a mission, it would be on how to take care of beer, because I don't think people realize how important it is to keep certain beers fresh. Some beers, it doesn't matter. Some beers age great. The higher the alcohol content usually means they just that much better at aging. But I'll go into a store and I won't name any names, but I went to an establishment the other day, and a lady that does not know me from my beer background, and she was sitting there at the table. And I took a drink of my beer and I set it down. I said, well, I'm not going to drink that one. And she says, you mind if I drink it? I said, have at it. It's all yours. And there wasn't anything wrong with the recipe or the style or anything. It just had not been handled right. And it tasted bad. It tasted like it had been poured through a paper sack to me. It just had a cardboard flavor to it. But that's from lack of care. You know, you can't take care of your beer.
You're talking like someone that would be like your buddy, a Weinstein, because that was kind of, if you did have a goal in all this, I remember reading a quote you had from an article a while back, was why not take the everyman's drink and elevate it? Like, you're talking like someone that, you know, drinks wine or whatever. So you're kind of, what you're getting at is you need to take beer similar to how you take care of wine, but people don't necessarily view it that way because of what you see on the right commercials every day.
Beer, the more hops there are in a beer, the more it has to change temperature. And the more that light will affect it. So if you've got a beer rack, I don't care how dark brown those bottles are, if you've got a beer rack sitting right in the front window with the sun shining in, that's going to ruin that beer. It will ruin it.
What would you do today if someone walked up to you and handed you a Mountains or Blue Miller Light, Coors Light?
Oh, I'd throw a party.
Really?
I ain't drinking it, but, you know.
So you wouldn't drink it, though? So if someone was like,
Let me tell you this. There are times that it, you know, I'll give you an example. I remember one time I went deer hunting, and the last day we ran out of beer. And when my buddies started offering me Miller Genuine Draft something I've never heard of, and I drank it, and I enjoyed it just fine. You know, it's not that some of those beers taste bad as much as it is they could taste so much better. I mean, it's not, I mean, if you get it cold enough and drink it cold, it's refreshing. It'll get the job done. But man, you can do so. I mean, it's like McDonald's. McDonald's food is delicious.
You can do better.
I mean, that's not the, you know, the best food in town, but I mean, it's delicious.
So, I just thought of another question. So when your buddies and you guys go out and do stuff, are you bringing craft beer? Like, do you have a more sophisticated beer that you bring with you than most of your buddies, or how does that work?
Yeah. In fact, at one point, a guy that I like to hunt with wanted to start learning a little bit about beer. And so that was my hunting dues, is that, you know, I would bring a million different beers for us to try over the course of our 4 or 5 days there hunting. And like that. I mean, but even now, it's like, if I know somebody doesn't like anything other than just ice cold lager, then I will buy a Yingling. You know, that's a family owned business. I mean, they're American. You know, all of the big beers otherwise are foreign owned now. I mean, there's Budweiser's not an American beer. Coors is not an American beer. Miller's not an American beer. And so, really, if you look right down to it, Yingling's the largest American brewery now, because they really are American.
I've never thought about that.
So I can take a beer like that to them, you know, and again, I'll drink cold lagers. They taste good.
Do you get stuff sent to you?
I have. They say it is illegal, but I've never had any problem okay with it. No one's ever given me the slightest. We went on vacation in San Francisco, and they had so many good beers, including Alesmith, which is one of my two or three favorite American breweries. And I packed them up like I would a bottle of wine. They had the little styrofoam things there, and I packed them up, sent them home, none to it. One time I was convinced that the baggage handlers had stolen some of my beer that I brought back from my trips and stuff. And sure enough, later that evening, here they came with it. You know, it just got lost, just like any other piece of luggage got lost.
Last thing I got for you. Do you have a favorite beer? Do you keep like a running list of five? How does that, do you rank them all? Have you just had too many to even?
Well, my absolute favorite is the West Lutheran 12, or really pretty much anything West Lutheran makes, but the West Lutheran 12 is just, it's beyond my ability to describe. But really what I will usually do, I tend to prefer IPAs, and I like the double IPAs in particular. And I'll keep maybe three or four different kinds in there so that when I get ready to have an IPA, I got one. And I think right now I may have four different ones in there. But I don't really have a favorite beer, but I have lots of top 20s, you know. You know, pretty much anything Dogfish Head makes, pretty much anything Stone makes, which makes the Arrogant Bastard, you know, any of those are going to be good. Salt Lake City makes some good beers. You know, Cigar City from Florida makes really good beer. I mean, there's just so many good beers out there that it's hard to tell. And really, there's a lot of really good beer out there now. I mean, you go to these places, when I travel, I don't think I've ever been to a town I couldn't find a good beer selection. Even the smallest ones, they're great. I mean, and
30 years ago, that wouldn't have been the case, right?
No, hell no. Hell no. I went to, it's a name of a big city, but it's in Georgia. It's like Columbus, Georgia, or something, Georgia. But it was a very small town in Georgia. And right up the road, my wife noticed that that's where they film a lot of the Hallmark stuff she watches. But this is super small town stuff. And yet, right there, not even in a city limit, just there in the middle of a cow field, was a great brewery. I mean, can't think of the name of it right now. It come to me by the time the interview ends. But, man, I mean, you used to find stuff like that all the time. Some tiny, here in Arkansas. Northern part of the state, you got a little hole in the wall that's out in the middle of nowhere called Gravity. Some of the best beer I have ever drank anywhere in the world. Same thing over to the west, just outside of Paris, Arkansas. You got Preston Rose. This lady is an organic farmer that knows everything there is to know about how to turn stuff that grows out of the ground into food and beverage. First time I met her, I had never heard of her at all. And she hands me a gluten-free beer, which is very difficult to brew and make it taste good. Wonderful. First sip of it, I knew I liked it. So, I mean, we've got really great breweries even here, even in the small towns now. The small towns have crazy ideas. They got a new one in Jacksonville I hadn't even been to yet that's a combination brewery and barbershop. And Jacksonville's dry. So how much trouble did they have to go through to get that place put in there, you know? Blade and barrel or something like that. Anyway,
that's crazy, John. I could have asked you questions for 3 hours. I could
answer them for three. I love talking.
Oh, I can certainly tell the passion news is through. I really appreciate your time. This was awesome stuff.
Anytime, buddy. Anytime.
And very next time enjoyed. I'm back through Arkansas, I'll give you a holler. Hopefully, you can teach me how to drink a beer or two the right way.
I will take you out for beers that you will enjoy. I promise.
Before we go, where can the people find you? I know we talked about. Cut back on the newsletter because you entered retirement, and the last thing you want to do when you're in retirement is work, right? But your Facebook, strictly Facebook, it seems like right now. So John the Beer Snob Facebook page, is that correct?
I'm John the Beer Snob at on Facebook, and then I also am John the Beer Snob at hotmail.com if you prefer to email. But either one of those will get you to me. Perfect. And I do return messages. I do return messages. As you know, because you sent me a message through my Facebook thing.
And you got back to me quickly. So check both of those out. If you have any questions, he'll be glad to answer them. Clearly, he has the knowledge. John, I really appreciate the time.
This has been a blast.
And hopefully we'll cross paths again soon.
Thanks again for all your kind words.